Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. So, how was your week?
Good.
Good. Good. Good. What are your challenges? What's on your mind?
Not as relevant to this week's content, but just one of the things that Dimitri and I briefly discussed was with the amount of work that we're doing within our book and Supernova, the productiveness of our weekly meetings. We're having Mondays growth meetings and we're having Fridays practice management meetings, but we're having a challenge with the amount of meetings that we're doing. So I wanted to know if there were ways that other teams have modified that successfully or if that's something that'll work itself out over time.
That's a really good question. How long are the meetings taking?
I would say on average probably 45 minutes.
Okay. And what were you doing before?
Before the meeting began or prior to initiating the meetings?
Prior to Supernova, how long did you take with team meetings?
Months ago, when our partner that retired was on the team, we would have once weekly meetings on Monday evenings that were a little under an hour. But that we weren't doing a regularly scheduled meeting since I would say late fall of last year.
Is it the Supernova, the volume of Supernova that's making the meeting seem difficult?
I think it's kind of a combination of retention of our book, the amount of reviews we're doing with clients, the preparation to be ready for those twice weekly meetings. It's all of it. It takes, you know, I would say time beforehand, time during, time after, and we have our calendars loaded with client meetings, which are all good things, but it's not leaving time to get as much work done even when you work late.
It's a really good question, and it's a really interesting conversation because it doesn't come up very often. I would say it will get better. Both Supernova will take less time. As you can see, you probably already are recognizing that. Maybe not. It's still pretty early. But when you're talking to clients a lot, in the beginning, as you know, there'll be a ton of issues that come up that they just haven't brought up. And you got to solve those. And then they go away. And then it's just a brief conversation. The agenda becomes smaller. Unless there's a big change in the market or there's a lot of volatility or something, then those conversations shorten. The same should happen with the team. You should be better. It shouldn't take the preparation time. You know what's going on. Particularly in your area of expertise, in the planning, or in the Supernova, or in the brand management. The only thing that would take time to me would be the leadership piece, pulling together the numbers each week. But to me, that's such a valuable thing anyway, to know where you are. The Monday meeting should take no time, because it should be just quick activities. You know, especially if you have a game board. If you have a game board or a scoreboard, a giving board, the board should simply tell the story. You know, we planned on having two meetings with centers of influence. We had to. End of conversation. You know, it's not really a long one. And, you know, we planned on using the VIPFA, you know, four times. We used it three times. we met with, you know, I'm doing preparation for my mastermind group. Now, if it's a training session where you guys are really learning stuff from each other, then that will take more time. But if it's simply reporting activity, it should take 15 minutes.
I think our Monday morning meetings or Monday afternoon meetings have been more geared towards what potential for business we have within the book, not as geared towards the supernova activities, but like if there's maturities or excess cash on hand, it's kind of more ideas generation for revenue.
Well, that's a different meeting. So you can't blame me for that meeting.
Maybe we misunderstood what the goal of the meeting.
The idea, I think you could have, if I were you and I were running the business, I would have a spreadsheet which would give me where the money was coming from and where it was in the pipeline. The best teams I've seen have this. They know exactly where the money is coming from and how long it's going to take them to get it. And they'll have so many...
Specifically about new business?
New business, yeah.
Okay.
So we're looking at existing business with our transactional book.
Well, that shouldn't take long. I mean, that's kind of an individual thing, right? You plan each day, sort of grows, but I don't know. I mean, when in the old days, we would have, you know, when we did a lot of transactional business, we would do that. These days, with less transactional business, there's less of that going on. I think your monthly plan of what you're going to focus on this month, mortgages or whatever, then there's some preparation time for that.
Well, just to give you an idea of how, like, our business works, I would say, you know, what 60% of the book is fee-based, and the other 40 is transactional. And with the transactional clients, it's usually UITs or bonds or, you know, structured products that we have to keep an eye on because they're either auto-called or they're maturing. And
yep.
A lot of those clients who are transactional, you know, we're just establishing new relationships with these people. So, you know, we're trying to get used to doing more of this transactional business because that's how the kind of the big book, you know, originally operated.
Yeah.
The majority of Stephanie's book is not transactional. It's mostly fee-based. You know, the clients that I have are, you know, mostly fee-based. But the clients that we're transitioning over from my dad are, you know, there are a lot of transactional clients. And I think he used it as a way to have constant contact with these folks so that when something was coming due, he had it noted so that he would call them up and, you know, shop around or whatever. So it's something that we need to focus on because at least to this point right now, that's how, you know, the business operates. And it's not something that I don't think any of us have been really familiar with or comfortable doing up until now.
Yeah, I understand. That's important for me to know. I think trying to incorporate those calls into the monthly calls so they're not extra calls.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, if you prepare ahead of time, you know, you know a month in advance that something is coming due, a structured product's coming due or UIT's coming due. And so you can have less, it takes some more work to look ahead, but then you have less phone calls to make. And that can be just part of your planning for that individual meeting, and you don't have to take any time, for the individual call, and that should take less time. I think what I'm hearing, though, is that you're taking time during that meeting to determine what you want to do with that money that's coming due. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, well, we're keeping an eye on saying, well, all right, here's what's coming up in the pipeline for this week. Here's what's maturing this week. So I can't speak for everybody else, but at least for me, if I see somebody that I'm responsible for and they have maturity, I try to work it into the monthly update. And if I haven't already made the contact with that person yet to introduce Supernova, it gives me an excuse to call them to set up a review and to say, oh, by the way, you also have, a structured note that's maturing. You know, we can take a look at that in our first meeting. I just want to get an understanding of what your ideas are.
Sure. Yeah, if you've got the 1242 already set up and you can do the month ahead, I think that would be much more efficient than a week ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Just throwing that out there. So you look ahead a month and say, okay, this is what's coming due this first week, second week, third week, fourth week, okay? So when we make our calls, we know that we can fit that in. And I like the idea of calling ahead of time, clearly. I don't want the money coming due and the person saying, but you just let it sit there for 2 weeks. That's not good. So I like, being at least a month ahead on all maturities would be something I'd probably put into my planning process. And then it's just, can be part of your 1242s. But if you're still contacting clients and signing them up for Supernova, sure, it's a great excuse to call them. Yeah, that's good. So I think you guys are still in you're in the sign-up stage, you're in the, transition stage, you're in the doing planning stage. So there's a ton that is going to be non-recurring. A lot of this will go away with repetition. And you'll kind of have to see that yourself to understand it. And at this point, there's just a lot of work. So it's kind of like you're going to need to do two-a-days for a period of time here, and then it'll smooth out. So I wouldn't panic that that there's absolutely no time for. Well, one of the frustrations for most teams is that they're like, Rob, you want us to do all this growth activity, but we're up to our elbows in alligators. And I understand that. I just want you to do as much as you can. No, you can't do more than you can do.
Can you explain the Monday meetings, specifically what we should be going over? Because I think we might take it in the wrong direction. So.
Yeah, the Monday meeting is an activity meeting. Here's the reality, Stephanie. The Monday meeting. Here's what people ask from Supernova. They ask me, get me organized, keep me organized. And then the second piece is, help me to grow, and then keep me growing. The Monday meeting is keep me growing. Okay? Because once you get the activity right, you will get the results you want. I was just up at a couple of universities in North Carolina, and one university has the activity right and the other one doesn't. One university is bringing in money like crazy and the other one isn't. It's always the same. It's always about the activity. So and so we went to this concept of giving in order to get. Focus on giving. So the activity is all about giving, giving introductions, helping, supporting, and giving, just being a good person. With centers of influence with your clients and others. And so we measure that through the game board or the giving board. And for a lot of people, that makes it a lot easier when they think about giving rather than getting. Because people hate rejection. And so they don't like the prospect because it involves rejection. But if they think of it as going out and helping others and protecting them from the Bernie Madoffs of the world, then they have a better, it's more comfortable for them then to prospect. So we measure the activity, right? And so there's 7 different strategies that we have for bringing in business. Some are more focused than others. Some are more passive and some are more active. So we've discussed them. We've discussed some of them, not all of them. But centers of influence and meeting with centers of influence on a regular basis is an active way of developing relationships which prove to end up getting you introductions. Now you got to get the right person who's a giver, who's interested in helping you. They have to understand what it is you want, and then they will introduce you eventually. My brother, it took him 3 years to get a center of influence, but that center of influence eventually generated more than half of his business. So it takes time, but it's good. It's good work. And most people aren't willing to do it. And that's what you measure on the giving board. The activity that it takes in order to get these relationships built.
Is so, the giving meeting, board a template that you have, or do we custom create one?
No, we have it. You'll see it in the workbook. It comes up. See, after 4 weeks are on segmentation, then 4 weeks on organization, and then 4 weeks on acquisition. So we teach you that, as, you know, down the road a little bit here. But it's just the 7 different strategies kind of put up on the board. You can adopt all of them or you can adopt some of them, but it's a way of measuring the activity which you use to generate the results. And you know that, right? If you made the calls, you made the cold calls, you got in the old days, you made the cold calls, you got the business. You know, either refine your script and you refine your process, but eventually it was a game of numbers. And if you did the work, you got the results. So we measured the activity, we got the results. This is basically the same thing. It's just different kinds of activities than simply cold calling. Okay? That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But your meeting is necessary. It's necessary for you to have that meeting, I think. Particularly since you're in a transition and you're doing business with clients that you're not used to doing business with, and products and services are coming up that are not used to, using. And so you gotta, there's an educational process. You know, if it were your dad, he wouldn't need a meeting. He could just do this stuff, right? But for you guys, I think it's good to have a meeting and figure it out. But over time, you're not going to need to meet on these things. It'll be just part of what you do every day. But good question. I mean, that's important for me to understand that. You know, if I'm there and sit with you guys, I can show you this stuff. It's when we're on the phone, it's a little bit harder. But that's why communications is so important. Okay, one of the tools, any other questions or any other successes from this past week?
I think just at least setting up, just having conversations with folks on introducing them to, you know, Supernova. You know, there was one client specifically that we had identified as somebody that, you know, we're planning to keep now, but if, you know, as we continue to upgrade our book in the future, she might be potentially one that we would design in the future.
Yeah.
And I explained to her the new servicing model, the minimum, absolute minimum that we have, the average client size that we have. And it was interesting to see her response. She does not meet the minimum right now. But we're keeping her because her brother has been a center of influence for us and a valued client of ours for a while, so we're going to treat her like a butler. And she was very frank. She's like, cut to the chase, like, you're letting me go? Are you letting me go? Are you re-signing me? And, you know, I explained to her, that we're keeping her, why is that we're keeping her, and, like, what our expectation is, going forward. And it went very well. But I thought it was a success because at least the way that we're telling the story, we got the reaction that we were looking for, that at least you had talked about in previous meetings. And I hadn't really gotten that reaction before out of anybody, so it was, I'm going to keep that in my back pocket so that, you know, as we continue to have reassignment conversations, that I make sure to tell it that way because, I think they understand. But,
yes, it's very interesting. You know, at that point, they either come up with more money or they sort of prepare themselves to be reassigned. If done right, then they really appreciate the fact that you're keeping them.
Yeah.
And it changes the relationship. You go from, you know, it sort of goes from you, them doing you a favor to you doing them a favor.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
And that's a big change. Because a lot of small accounts do not have the right attitude about, you know, what we do.
Yeah.
And this will square things away.
Yeah.
So it can be a very healthy conversation from your point of view. And I think from their point of view, I think they then value you more and see you in a different light. And therefore they listen better. They're more compliant. And they do better then. You know, so many times clients don't listen and don't do what we tell them and then underperform because of it. And it's not good and it's not healthy for either. So that's great. That's good. That's a nice success story.
Hey, Rob. John here.
Yeah, John.
I had two major client meetings and, you know, gave them their mini-me folders and went through the fold, started the meeting, asked what was on their client agenda, and then actually started at the back of the folder and worked my way forward and in the meeting. But just FYI, both meetings, for some reason, the people really picked up on the enthusiastically endorsed providers page. One of them said they've never seen anything like that before. and the other one just spent a lot of time going through the, so this is really great to be able to organize everything like this. And it just was something I wanted to mention to you that I really thought that was, it created conversation and a positive vibe response from the client. I was just surprised that that was the one page that seemed to carry over with both clients through the meeting. But they overall love the folders, love the way that the presentation goes. And so I just wanted to let you know that.
Well, congratulations. That's great. Great feedback. And that segues into our week where we talk about enthusiastically endorsed referrals. But by the way, I was just in Charlotte yesterday and I was up for the Wake Forest NCAA tennis championships, which were, Wake Forest is now in the Final Four, so we're really excited.
Nice. Who did
they play? Well, I'm not actually sure who they play. They beat Columbia and then they beat Illinois.
Uh-huh.
Ohio State is, UCLA and Ohio State are, we're ranked one, UCLA two, Ohio State three. So I think it's going to be one of those. I am actually, I had to leave, so I missed the match. Did it be Sunday, but. We were there all week watching them. It was fun. And you got a great city there. A great state. Anyway, so, yeah, that's wonderful. We spent some time talking about the enthusiastically endorsed list. What questions do you guys have on that? And do you see the value as John's clients do? Or should we spend time on that? What would you like to do on that?
I think we're pretty clear on that.
The response that we're getting has been very similar to the response that John has gotten from introducing it to clients. And I think right now, like, we've given a lot of our clients the mini folders. We make a point to highlight that page every time we sit down with folks. So as we have, you know, the monthly updates set up, you know, I think we're making a point to try to fill out that information. So it's kind of new to a lot of the clients, so we haven't received a lot of the information back, but I think they value it and they see the value in it.
Well, you guys are going to be very, very much on the cutting edge here because I think this is an area that, you know, the average team does not get so excited about, and I don't know why. Because I think it's a gold mine, and I think the more you use it, and the more leverage you bring from it, the more excited you'll be about it. So I see it as a real opportunity, and, you know, I've really got to encourage teams to get them to put it on their agendas for their monthly meetings and to start and to continue to fill it out. But, you know, just visualize that you're a CEO and you're brought your family into Charlotte and you don't know anything, right? And all of a sudden you meet with you and you welcome them to the city and you hand them this as a gift and say, look, you know, I know your wife is new and you got four kids and, you know, you got to figure out schools and all the rest of it. Here's an opportunity to really get a jump start on that. We've been spending the last 5 years putting together this enthusiastically endorsed list. And just depending on your particular circumstance, this is a list of trusted advisors that know that when we hand their name to somebody, that this is a commitment to deliver. And if they can't, they'll let you know. But You know, and I don't think people in our society are doing this. You know, I really don't. And I don't think that the people that are in these groups that get referred understand the trust commitment that you're making to each other, that you will not be a jerk, that you're going to take good care of these people. And I think I've said it to you in the past, one of the key elements is that when you bring somebody into this circle of trust, that they can't be a jerk. That you can't give this list to somebody until you vetted them as being a good person. Because you can mess up your own enthusiastically endorsed group.
Can I ask you a question really quick on the enthusiastically endorsed?
Yes.
As we continue to get, you know, to fill this out for all the clients that we have, are you aggregating, or what's the best way to organize it? Because you have, it's kind of siloed. So if we have, let's say, 100 clients and each person has, you know, a different folder, they'll put names in different accounts they use. Are you like putting that into like a master spreadsheet at the end of the year to see, okay, where's their overlap, or you kind of get an idea of who's using like which accountants and, you know, which
right.
ones you recommend it. But are you
right.
putting that into a master list so you can kind of keep track of it and just statistics on it? Or are you just
absolutely no. It's an aggregation. You get five people all saying that this is the greatest CPA in the world. Then you go see them.
Right.
And you see if that person, you know, and you've got to vet them to make sure that they are a giver, a person that's worth, that will actually commit to something like this. And then you do have a master list. And I would guard that master list pretty carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to have geographic, you know, it's going to be somewhat geographic, right? Because, you know, one county is not going, you know, you can't have school systems and, you know, each county is going to, you're going to have the right school system and the right teachers and things like that. But theoretically, if, you know, you could do it literally by county or neighborhood or whatever. So it would take, it takes some work. But it is, I think it's incredible. I think it really has some value.
How long does it take to really kind of complete it? You know, because we're only in the first couple of months. How should we measure, you know, like a good timeline for it? Like at the end of the first year, we want to have it like totally filled out, or... You know,
well, I would have it filled out, but I would say 3 years would be what I would, 3 years would be my goal to have what I consider a really valuable, enthusiastically endorsed list. And it's going to change. People are going to retire and so forth. So it's dynamic. But I say you should have it filled out in a year, but really valuable in 3 years. And you should be doing business with virtually everybody on the list that qualifies. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be also one of my goals. I mean, to have a CPA that is the top CPA in your market and you not do business with them wouldn't be good. Because they've got to really be able to tell your story. And the same with family attorney and everybody else, business broker, so forth. So this takes time. But, you know, it shouldn't take, it, you know, and that's why I mean the 3 year period, because it takes time. Sometimes it takes that much time to get a person convinced that they should move their business to you.
Now I have another question, separate from the enthusiastically endorsed list, but it has to deal with scheduling.
Yep.
Because, you know, I was going through that scheduling template that you sent to Sarah, her, you know, Sarah's our assistant.
Yep.
At least the way it's been going right now is, you know, when we set up, when we meet with the client first, we get them on the 12-4-2 cycle or the 4-1 cycle. You know, she's basically doing it like month by month. So, like, we do a meeting, everything goes well, the client's kind of bought in, and then we defer it to Sarah to like schedule the next appointment. Right now, she's just kind of looking at the next month, seeing what's available, putting the person in, like, in our calendars. It's going pretty smooth, but I don't think it's probably, you know, for just going through the template that you sent, I don't think it's the way that it was intended to happen. So, do you recommend us kind of going through, sitting down and going through the template with Sarah to start kind of filling that out? Or, like, what's our relationship to you with, I guess, that document that you sent over, and how much of it should she do versus, you know, is she expected to do it all like on her own, or should we, you know, be pretty involved in like helping her get that going in the right direction?
Well, I mean, the idea is that it should be Rob Knapp should have his appointment, you know, the first Tuesday of the month, at, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning for the rest of the year. And that would include his in-person meeting and everything else. So that shouldn't be a variable. And she should be able to do that whole thing. Call the client, email the client, confirm the appointment, send the agenda, send the executive summary. So, it shouldn't be, you know, you have a meeting with Rob this month, and then we start all over trying to figure out when Rob is available and when that appointment should be. That should be pretty much based on mutual availability, as I like to say. You know, you are doing surgery, either, you know, you pick the time. That's why I said create your ideal day.
Right.
You know, so then you know when you're available to meet with clients. And then she fits the clients in, and she should be getting them for their sake. You know, they should be able to plan on when that call's going to be. And you know, over time that may need to be adjusted because that client's schedule changes, or it would be more convenient if I had it at 4 o'clock versus 3 o'clock. And so you adjust. But it shouldn't be, oh, wow, I've got a new, you know, brand new idea. We're going to have an appointment this month. No. It should be, client should know it. You should know it. Everybody knows it. And it should be a ritual. Does that answer it, or is there something I'm missing?
No, that answers it. I think, at least from my standpoint, I feel like it's an area that we need to work on, because we're not making it a ritual yet. It's handled on a monthly basis. So I want to get to the point where it becomes a ritual and it becomes the expectation that there is a set time and a time slot, like every month. Like, you do it for us, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's not, we're not there yet. You know, we're not there yet.
It's a whole lot.
Like, a breakdown of what we need to do to, like, take the next step forward.
It's a lot easier doing it this way, clearly, than it is winging it, you know.
Yeah.
Because then you gotta, then it's a brand new game every month, and that's like crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a training process here. You know, everybody is being trained. You, Sarah, the clients, everybody. So just, you know, understand that. And the natural result of communication is misunderstanding. So even though you say something once, it doesn't mean people understand it. So including your clients, they're not going to get it. So don't be impatient with them. Just go over it again. Be patient. But be persistent and be consistent. You know, don't back off. You don't see me backing off for much in Supernova, right?
Right.
I'm like, I mean, we figured it out. This is the best process. If you got a better way, tell me. Otherwise, this is the way we're going to do it. And that is, people get that. And they go, okay, you've done your homework. You know what you're doing. We'll do it that way. And unless they can figure out some better way. Otherwise, everybody's, you know, then the team, everything is crazy. And then it gets, I mean, that's why Supernova is so great for you guys as for everybody else. Because it's simple, but not easy, but it's simple. Once you get it, everything is just like smooth. And that's where you get your productivity increases. You're not seeing the productivity increases because there's so much change going on. But you will. You will. Okay? I wanted to emphasize the trusted part of the enthusiastically endorsed process. And I didn't really understand that when I created this, how important that piece of it is, the word trusted. So emphasize that when you're building this, that you can really trust these people. Because you're putting your clients in their hands, and they're putting their clients in your hands. So it's a very important relationship. The concept of the bank of trust is kind of the final thing here for this week. The bank of trust is that you and I have a relationship that's built on mutual trust. It's on mutual respect. And when I do things, trust is built by consistently doing what you say you're going to do over time. Okay? So as long as I, you know, show up on time, I deliver the process, I help you, you gain respect for me, and you trust me that I'm not going to tell you something that isn't in your best interest. You show up on time, you do your homework, and so we have a trusting relationship. If I don't show up, you will, because I've made numerous deposits in the bank of trust, over time, you will forgive me, but there will be a debit in the bank. Okay? If I consistently break that trust, then we bankrupt the bank and the relationship falls apart. So when we, the most important thing you have is your, in your relationship with your client is trust. So doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it is the most important thing you can do. So we call these deposits in the bank of trust. And then when a stock goes down or somebody screws up some product or service or the firm has a bad headline, your clients are understanding and they forgive you because you have all these deposits in the bank of trust. So that's where 1242 helps so much. Because you literally are, every time you call, every time you email, every time you confirm, you're building another deposit in the bank of trust. So it's just a really important concept. And think of it in relationships. Think of it in everything, every day you do business. It's particularly important with these enthusiastically endorsed partners that I would literally explain this to them, that this is a relationship built on trust. This is the concept of the bank of trust. This is our relationship, and we expect that to be your relationship with our clients. That if you have a problem with a client, I expect you to call us and tell us so that we can be prepared, and we'll do the same for you. So it's a sacred relationship, and you can't do business with people you can't trust, and you can't do business with clients you can't trust, or clients that aren't willing to pay for what they want or need, or are not willing to trust others. So really, really, really important concept. And your life will be much better if you, you know, identify people you can trust and do business with them and have friends and all that that you can trust. I mean, that's, it's all part of the whole life's little rituals and important relationships. And it's unique in the world because there's very few people truly that are capable of demonstrating that kind of loyalty and trust with each other. And I think that's what we all seek, but many times it's not clear, and people just, every time you're late for an appointment, you're breaking your trust. People say, I would say to them, well, I've never, you know, I'm a trustworthy person. I say, you're ever late. And they say, oh, yeah. Okay, every time you're late, you break the, you take a debit from the bank of trust. So just make sure you're not, in the little things you do every day, you're not violating the bank of trust. Okay? That's our little lesson for today.
Sure.
Okay. All right? Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.